Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On March 24, 2021, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Coniglia v. Strom. The question before the court is whether the community caretaking exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement extends to the home. Robert Frommer, senior attorney at the Institute for Justice, and Matt Caveden, assistant public defender at the Northeastern Judicial Circuit, both join us today to discuss this case's oral argument.
Today we are talking about Coniglia versus Strom, a case where a domestic squabble could help clarify a critical part of the Fourth Amendment, whether government officials can enter your house without a warrant or consent if they're engaged in what's known as community caretaking functions. Now, before I jump into the facts of the case, I want to do a little background here. And first, and of course, everybody on the call is probably familiar with this, is the general idea, background of the Fourth Amendment. The Fourth Amendment is really, when you read the text of it, it is about the right to be secure in our persons and property against unreasonable search. And when you go back into the history, one of the large big things that they were concerned about were warrantless searches, or searches done pursuant to general warrants, laws that allow officers to, that would allow officers to enter any house they thought might contain evidence or a crime or uncustom goods. And so the Fourth Amendment was supposed to clarify that absent prior judicial authorization, like a warrant, most searches were unreasonable at common law. The warrant had to specify the exact place to be searched and the justification. Now, there are sometimes, of course, when a warrant wasn't required, one of those being when there's exigent circumstances, when things are happening at such a pace that there's really no time to get a warrant, that there's an imminent action requiring immediate steps by the government. Now, the community caretaking function comes up in a somewhat similar capacity. It came up in a case called Cady versus Dombrowski. In that case, officers went to a car accident on a public right-of-way, and they towed the car off the public roadway into a lot. And they thought that there was the person involved in the accident was a Chicago police officer, and they thought that, well, he didn't have his gun on him, and we think that he's supposed to have his gun with him all the time, so it must be in the car. So they went back to the car and did an inventory search in order to secure the weapon, and in the process found evidence linking that driver to a murder. And ultimately, the Supreme Court said the warrantless search of the trunk for the weapon was fine because under this community caretaking doctrine, officers frequently have to do things like deal with car accidents and other public nuisances that pose a risk of harm to third parties. Now, this case is about an evolution or potential evolution of the community caretaking exception. And it's important to understand the facts of the case. In August 2015, you have 68-year-old Edward Coniglia, and he's joking with his wife, Kim, who he's been married to 22 years, that he wouldn't use a coffee mug that his brother-in-law used because he might, quote, catch a case of dishonesty. Unsurprisingly, that led him to an argument. He got tired of the bickering, so Edward went into his bedroom, grabbed an unloaded handgun, came back, put it on the kitchen table, and said to his wife, "Why don't you just shoot me and get me out of my misery?" Shockingly, this did not end the dispute. They kept arguing. Edward left to take a drive to cool off, but, you know, they kept fighting when he came back, so his wife, Kim, decided to spend the night at a hotel. The next day, Kim phoned home. She didn't get any answer, so she called the police in Cranston, Rhode Island, asking if they could escort her home and perform a well check on her husband. When they got there, the officer spoke with Edward on the back deck, and according to their incident report, he seemed normal and was calm for the most part. In fact, he said he had never committed suicide. And the officers didn't really ask him any factors about his risk of suicide or risk of violence. But despite that, they still thought Edward could hurt himself, and so they wanted to take him to a local hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. Now, Edward initially refused, you know, insisting like his mental health wasn't really any of their business, but he agreed to go so long as the police promised they wouldn't seize his guns while he was gone. Well, there's no other way around it. They lied to Edward, because after he left, they went in and lied to Kim and said that Edward had consented to the confiscation of his guns. Kim, believing the officers, took them to the two weapons, and which they seized. Of course, Edward was almost immediately discharged from the hospital, and he reached out to the police to get his guns back. They wouldn't give them back. So he ended up bringing a lawsuit arguing that the officer's actions violated the Fourth Amendment. The district court disagreed. It held that the officer's actions were justified under the community caretaking exception. And on review, the First Circuit affirmed. The First Circuit joined a number of other lower courts that have expanded that concept of community caretaking exception into the home. Circuits like the Eighth and Ninth Circuits. They've said that since officers might have similar non-emergency duties in homes, just like they do with cars, which are divorced from any crime control, it's okay to allow warrantless entries there. And so under this reasoning, it's fine for the officers to enter without a warrant, so long as their actions were, quote, within the realm of reason. The First Circuit really leans into this expansion. It says that the community caretaking doctrine is grown from its vehicle origins, and now it's a catch-all for the wide range of responsibilities that police officers must discharge in their duties. And so it says, well, because of this and because these things aren't related to criminal investigations and prosecutions, it doesn't really make sense to have a warrant. So what we're going to say is that it's reasonable for them to act by balancing, determining it's going to be reasonable for them to act. And the way we're going to determine that is by balancing the need for the caretaking activity and the affected individual's interest in freedom from government intrusions. In other words, a general balancing test. The First Circuit went on to say the officers just have to have solid non-investigatory reasons to go in. There doesn't need to be the type of immediacy that we typically require with exigent circumstances. And essentially the police, when they're in there, must act in accordance with, quote, sound police procedure. And like the other circuits, the First Circuit said ultimately whether the officer's warrantless entry is justifiable or not, is reasonable or not, is really about whether their actions were within the realm of reason. So that's where it came up to the Supreme Court. And I have to say, this was a wild and woolly argument that spanned over 100 minutes. It had both the petitioner on one side, and on the government side, it was both the state of Rhode Island splitting time with the Solicitor General. Now, one thing that really struck me from the argument is the extent to which the parties were really struggling with the hypothetical fact patterns that the justices were putting forward. And this started pretty early on. One of the first questions from the chief was to petitioner, and he asked if the police could enter the home of an elderly neighbor whose neighbors called up and said, she's late for dinner, she's never late for anything, and she's not picking up her phone, and that they're worried. When petitioner's counsel suggested that there weren't enough facts there for the police to say that they could enter, some justices were taken aback. Justice Sotomayor, for instance, who's really no fan of excessive search and seizure, said, for instance, counsel, I'd be hard-pressed to think that any judge would not consider the hypothetical pressed by the Chief Justice as justifying a knock and entry. But when you start looking at that, you might be originally thinking, oh, Sotomayor might be okay with the doctrine. But when you start looking at the rest of her comments, it becomes clear that she thinks the facts presented in the chief's hypothetical would be enough to justify entry under an existing exception to the warrant requirement, like exigent circumstances. Justice Kavanaugh likewise said to the petitioner that his response to the chief's hypothetical about the elderly neighbor was somewhat startling, and he was worried that now allowing warrantless access could mean that people might get hurt. You know, there might be people who fell or injured, or people who might be, you know, at threat of suicide who might not die. And of course, if for hypos, we always have the classic Stephen Breyer hypos coming in. This oral arguments version was about whether officers could enter homes if plague infested rats, which I don't think have been seen in the continental United States outside of some small areas for decades, if not centuries. Could he go in if he saw a rat that he thought was carrying the plague go into the house? So we dealt with that, but the hypos weren't just a difficulty for the petitioner. They were also something that really set the court off when the attorney for the state got up. So the real fun started when the chief asked the counsel for Rhode Island another hypothetical. Okay, in this one, a cat gets stuck in a tree in someone's backyard. And the chief asked, well, and the people who own the house aren't home. The chief asked if the police could hop the fence, go into the people's backyard, climb up the tree and get the cat. Counsel for Rhode Island says, sure, because in his view, whether something's reasonable, again, just turns on balancing the individual's right to privacy against the intrusion. And since this is a pretty small intrusion, in his views, it was reasonable. Well, that answer seemed to make a number of justices uncomfortable. The chief, for instance, remarked that, quote, at common law and under our cases, the interests protected by the Fourth Amendment, I think, are a little more significant for that. But in response, counsel for the state said that the common law was only concerned about criminal investigations, and that it wasn't really, and that none of the lessons from the common law were useful here. Justice Alito, reacting to that cat hypothetical, said, quote, one of the things that's troubling to a lot of people about the caretaking exception that doesn't seem to have any clear boundaries. And when you tell us it can include getting a cat down from a tree, that fortifies that concern. Now, I will note that the Solicitor General wisely chose not to defend the state's cat answer, instead said that there would have to be unusually compelling circumstances to justify actions there. Another hypo that came up that the state caused some controversy with, I would think, is when Justice Barrett asked, well, let's say the police saw a home in a town with a high rate of COVID infections where there were some people gathered inside and weren't wearing masks. Could the police, you know, just go in and bust that up? And again, the counselor for attorney for the state said, yep, absolutely could. So that really goes to show, at least in the state and the SG's mind, the breadth of this test and what it allows. Now, another issue that was that came up in the case is the community caretaking exception and whether it really makes sense to apply a doctrine that started in the vehicle context and apply it to homes. And Justice Thomas asked about how that rule really made any sense, applying that rule, because in Katie, they took pains to talk about how vehicles were sort of unique and posed unique threats. The counsel for the state said in response, again, that there was really only one standard, reasonableness, and that so even if Katie versus Dombrowski was originally a vehicle case, there's no reason that we can't import its reasonableness analysis into the homes context as well. Likewise, Justice Kagan pressed on the difference between cars and homes, saying to the counsel for the state that I think that under the Fourth Amendment, it's the home that's special and the automobile that's distinctly not. And another thing that arose a lot was whether administrative warrants could serve as a substitute to warrantless entry. Like in a situation where you have time to go get a warrant, could we get an administrative warrant for well checks or things like that? Counsel for the Solicitor General said, no, because there's no warrant process in a lot of these non-investigatory situations. But that didn't really seem to draw much traction with the court. Some justices, though, didn't struggle to have what probable cause would look like outside the criminal context. Justice Barrett said, for instance, quote, "It sounds odd to my ears to talk about probable cause, to think that someone would benefit from help, right?" But as the attorneys pointed out, the court has blessed administrative warrants before, for instance, in an important case called Camera, and another case decided the same day called C. Justice Kagan asked if there were administrative warrants that could handle this kind of situation, to which counsel for petitioner pointed out that in many states there are red flag laws and involuntary commitment laws where you can go to a judge, say someone's being a danger to themselves or others, so we either need to remove the weapons from their possession or commit them. And so the petitioner also agreed that a similar law like that with an administrative warrant could tackle the facts in the chief's old neighbor hypothetical. But interestingly, so a lot of people were saying, okay, administrative warrants look okay. This looks like a good alternative. But interestingly, then Justice Gorsuch seemed to come and really attack the idea of them, saying that if the government can just get an administrative warrant to come in and test for illness, to check the temperature of the house, whether it's too hot or too cold, et cetera, what's left of the Fourth Amendment? Which suggests that, at least for the home and perhaps elsewhere, the Justice Gorsuch is skeptical of allowing entries into private property just to further health and safety interests. We'll have to see what happens with that in the months and years to come. But ultimately, I think the crux of the case is going to turn on what one particular phrase means, or word means, unreasonable. Because that was the key dividing line between the petitioner on the one side and the state and the SG on the other.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.